thought we'd fill it in.
My lease is excused.
I like you all just fine.
Hi, David.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Hello, everybody.
Good morning.
Hello. Okay. All right, we've got a double backup recording. We've got recording on Teams and recording audio. So we want to welcome everybody. Stephen Foote is picking the jury this morning, and so Robert Cosen, our chair-elect, excuse me, will be running the meeting. So, Robert.
All right, do we need to do a voice count, or is the count Marilyn?
Let's, for the recording, let's just have everybody check in.
Okay, so Robert Cosen, St. George City.
Those in the room.
James Swing.
Okay, James, welcome.
David Levitt from Utah County.
Welcome, David.
Tyson Skeen with UBC.
Rob Van Dyke, Kane County.
UPC.
Bob Church, UPC.
Marilyn Jasperson, UPC.
And then, I'll go on the order that they're on my screen. We've got Will Carlson from Salt Lake, Kathy Locker, Ed Montgomery, who has a proxy for Ryan Peters, he said, Steve Garside, and Steve has Stephen Foote's proxy, and Yvette Rodier. And then Scott Sweat is also joining us. So I think that gives us a quorum or a majority, so we can go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just going down the agenda, the first item, minutes from June 28th, 2021 council meeting. We need a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
And a second.
Anybody want to second the minutes?
Am I?
Oh, you're not. No, you two are not yet voting members.
Right.
Yeah.
James, you want to say?
He's not a voting member yet.
Oh, he's not a voting member.
No, not yet.
Well, I can't say anything.
Are you waiting for a second?
Yes.
Second.
Okay, Will.
Will?
Yeah. So Rob Van Dyke and Will. Okay.
Okay.
Any discussion on the motion? No.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Looking for a vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Perfect. Thanks, y'all.
Can they hear him?
So, for those of you online, how is the audio coming from the room? Is it? Are you guys okay, or is it just me that's it's kind of cutting in and out?
It's very difficult to hear. I can hear Bob very well, but nobody else.
Okay. Rob, actually, do you want to come over here? Yes. Join me over here. So then everybody else in the room, just speak up if you have something to say. We have some nicer equipment that arrived yesterday after we left the office, so we're doing computer tech. So anyway.
All right, so the next item is fiscal year 22 budget review. Assuming that's going to be you,
yeah.
Bob, going over
yeah.
That.
All right. So hopefully you've all had a chance to review. I shouldn't have used the word grossly underestimated, but I mean that's kind of what it was, in the fact that we had a $95,613 carryover, which is unprecedented. I've never had that much. We always try to shoot for about $10,000 to $20,000 carryover, but I think a couple reasons for that. One is we were able to save quite a bit of money on virtual conferences last year. And so we appreciate Marilyn and others that helped with that. The other is, how do I say this judicially? There has been at times miscommunication between us and our money handlers at the AG's office, and I think that I didn't get the right amount that was actually coming to us from the legislature. I'm not sure if that's the reason, but suffice it to say we had a huge windfall this year, which we can't count on normally. And so what has been added into the budget for this year is a train-the-trainer course, which we'll talk about in just a second. We're going to add an advanced trial skills. We have some ideas for the training committee that we want to post them. We don't know that we want to call it advanced trial skills, but it will be an advanced skills class of some sort. And then we're also maybe looking at possibly throwing in a visual trial skills. We've had several people that have asked at BASIC and at other conferences to train on how to make their trials a little bit more visual. So we're looking at possibly adding a course, and that could be a one-day course, depending upon how we decide to do that. So that's what we're looking at in terms of additional training. We'll, like I said, we'll take the budget to the training committee next month when they meet. We haven't had a law clerk for how many years now? 4 years?
At least.
At least 4 years. And so for this year only, we're going to look to hire a law clerk, which means then that we will start up our newsletter again. We anticipate the law clerk will be able to help Tyson with the
master offense table.
Thank you, master offense table. I've already talked with Tyson and Marlise, you know, about projects that the law clerk can work on, and so we're going to have a law clerk for the first time in 4 years, for at least a year. And then the
wow.
Yeah.
So Dan Burton wanted me to bring up that the AG's office would be willing to look at supplying a law clerk.
Okay.
Ongoing.
Okay.
Wow.
I didn't hear any of that.
Oh yeah, sorry. Rob Van Dyke was saying that he just got a text or message from. That's just for the recording.
Oh, okay.
Rob, yeah. The Dan Burton said that the AG's office would be willing to look at supplying or providing a law clerk for us ongoing. I'll talk to Dan about that, but we appreciate that. I think for this year, again, I don't want to have a huge carryover unless that's what the council wants. I mean, it is nice to have a little bit of a buffer. I admit, maybe we see if the AG's office can, if we can supplement that for a year, but I'll talk to him about that.
Okay,
thank you. But extraordinary reimbursement expense. When we redid our statute a couple of years ago, we talked about, and some of you were around at that time, about taking any reference out of our statute. You may recall that it says that the prosecution counsel will reimburse extraordinary expenses if there is money in the budget. And it was decided to go ahead and leave that in. And so, is that something that we want to put back into the budget? What it was used in the past, and this predates me, the 7 years that I've been with UPC, we've never had the funds to do it. So I think probably Steve and Marilyn and Ron are the only, I don't know if James, were, I don't know if you were ever involved in council decisions on extraordinary, reimbursing extraordinary expenses. Okay, James is shaking his head. Yeah. So I don't know, Steve, if you want to talk about what that was for. My understanding is there was a committee that reviewed the requests, that it was used, and there was a standard, not standards, I don't know if that's the right word. Anyway, requirements.
Right, yeah.
That's what I was looking for, requirements as to what they had to be, but it was like for bringing out expert witnesses, or Marlise said Layton used it one time to bring in a victim that had moved out of state. So it's those kinds of things. And so I'm opening it up to the council if we want to consider that for this year, or if we don't want to get back into that business.
And it was $25,000 only, cap.
I thought it was only 12.
It was what?
Marilyn thought it was 25,000. I thought the last time I looked at it, it was like 12 or 12.5.
That may have been just what we had to be.
Yeah, I think
to
it's just whatever is available.
But we've used it up to 25,000.
Okay, Marilyn says it's been up to 25,000, but it's you know, and actually, I should have done this in a different order. Do we want to consider adding that into the budget somehow?
Most of the time, if you look back in history, most of the time it was $5,000, and a lot of time we couldn't meet all of the requests. But I thought that it was a good function of UPC to do that. Regardless, I mean, like I said, it wasn't always that much money, but every little bit helps, especially with the smaller jurisdictions that don't have all those resources readily available.
Are we discussing this just because of the 95,000 carryover?
Yes.
So is that, I guess what I don't understand, is that money that has to be spent?
No.
Or is that like a fund balance now that can be drawn upon in future years, or how does that work?
Well, it's a couple things. So Rob Van Dyke was asking, is this, will you respond to Marlise's text? That he was asking if this money can be carried over, if it has to be spent. It's non-lapsing, so it's our money. My concern is if we keep carrying over a large balance, that the legislature will look at us and say, obviously we're giving you too much money, you don't need, you know, future funding. And so on the one hand, I'm suggesting that yes, we probably want to spend down most of it. I mean, I still would like to try to plan on having a $10,000 to $20,000 cushion just in case.
Okay. Well, that's a good way to spend it, obviously. If we need to, for whatever reason, if we need to spend it, that's a good way to spend it.
Okay. So Rob was saying it's a good reason to spend that money if in fact we have it.
I'm calling Marlise. Unless she's on.
Hey, Marilyn.
Hi. Okay, we brought you in.
Oh, was she waiting to join?
Yeah, she couldn't. She can't join because she's traveling.
Okay. All right, Marlise has joined us. Any other discussion?
I will say.
Bob.
Yeah.
I think if we, to the extent that we can get back to where we need to be as far as providing trainings, and then we still have excess funding, I think the expert witness fee fund is a great next step. But first, before we start spending money on this fund, revamping up the training and providing the trainings that we haven't been providing in the past, I think should take a higher priority and be closer to the mission of the organization.
Right. And David was going to say, had a comment.
I was just going to say that 20 some years ago when I was on UPC as JFK attorney, we were for an extraordinary prosecution. It was enormously helpful, but I agree with those comments.
Okay. What David was saying, for those of you who couldn't hear, is that 20 years ago when he was Juab County attorney, they were reimbursed. But he agrees with Will that we need to get back to our training mission. And I agree with that. Let me just look at my numbers one more time. Right now, if all goes as projected, we're going to have about a 25,000 carryover. Let me hold off on this discussion for just one more minute with those thoughts of mine, because I wasn't sure what order to put this in, because you'll see on the next bullet, excuse me, is as part of the grant application that I filed with CCJJ for e-prosecutor, I requested to be reimbursed for essentially $90,000 of Ron's salary. Since he spends about 70%, 60% of his time on e-prosecutor. I'm about 99.99% certain that we are going to get that funding. So for this year only, or at least for each year that grant is funded, we may have an additional $80,000 to $90,000 that comes in, but again, it's dependent upon grant funding. What I did not do is I didn't add that fund into the current budget because we don't have it, and I didn't want to count on it. But if we do get the grant funding, then that's going to be an additional $89,000 or so to our budget. And so right now, if you look at it, without adding that $90,000 in, I've got about $25,000 carryover, which adding in another $90,000 is going to be you know, 110,000 that we're possibly looking at carrying over. So with that, I know it's hard, you know, talking about, because we don't know for sure. And so there's lots of options that we can spend the training dollars, as Will said, to get back. At one point, we were paying for everyone to come to basic. We haven't been able to do that for a couple of years. That's something that we could do, where we offset all of the costs for students to attend basic. We're planning on paying for all of the costs for people to attend train the trainer, so that it's not a burden to the offices to send their people. We could look at, you know, for a time being, reducing the costs of our conferences. You know, the registration fee has gone up to $125. We could look at reducing those costs for a time period. However, that will require a change to the standard, I can't remember what it's called, schedule of fees, the fee schedule. I'd have to take that to the legislature, and they may wonder why we're reducing our fees. But I mean, there's lots of, and Tyson shaking his head, we don't want to get involved with the legislature.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's lots of options, and I realize it's kind of iffy because you don't exactly know what the numbers are. So I guess maybe what I'm asking is, for right now, we'll follow Will and Dave's suggestions. We will fully fund, or, you know, fully have all of the trainings that we can this year, that we can reasonably hold, and then if there's money left over, look at the extraordinary expenses. Is that, I'm sorry, I'm kind of jabbering here. I think out loud.
Is that how your budget's set up that way now?
It is, yes.
So you're just looking for a motion to approve that?
Yeah.
I move to approve the budget.
Okay, sorry. Rob's cutting to the chase. Thank you. Rob made a motion to approve the budget.
One other thing before we get to it. All of that stuff, very important, great ideas. I don't disagree with any of it. I think all of that is sort of dependent on keeping the staff that we have. I think all the people, right seats on the bus. What if we kick some back to staff, somewhat as an incentive to keep them? I don't want to lose any of those people.
I won't make a comment on that.
Well, I will. I want to agree with Ed on that. I think that that we're healthy, we're doing well, headed in the right direction. And obviously, with all the insanity that's happened over the last several months, you know, Bob, you deserve some credit on the flexibility with the way that the training happened and that it's done and been done well. And so I don't disagree with Ed that we should look at our staffing needs, and one way to tell them thanks is through a little bit of a fiscal kick in the pocketbook.
Bob, could you discuss a little bit how that works? Like are there COLAs? Is there a merit structure that you work within? Is it just up to the council to set the salaries? Like, some of that I know and some of it I don't.
Right.
So if you could...
Okay, that's a great question, and I'm actually prepared to answer that. So, by statute, the council sets our salary. If you go, it's in 67-5A. It says, I can tell you, that the council shall select and establish the compensation of the director, the resource prosecutors, and the administrative staff that's consistent with state personnel policies. And so that puts us not entirely square with the way the AG office salary structure. The way for the attorneys, actually let me back up. Before I talk about like an actual salary increase, is there is money that the AG's office provides to us for employee incentives. And Ron and Marilyn and Tyson and Marlise have received employee incentive awards over the years. I have not. I've received one employee incentive award that Dave Carlson put in for me a couple of years ago, but there are those in the AG's office that have denied other nominations for employee incentives that have been put forward on my behalf. That's an AG decision because it's AG dollars that would have been used to pay any incentive given to me, so that's been denied.
What? How much are we talking about? What is that?
I don't know. For the award that would have been nominated, was nominated on my behalf, that was denied, would have been over $1,000 because it requires executive approval or denial. And so that's what it was denied. I don't know how much it was.
Pretty sure it was $1,500.
Tyson said I was nominated for $1,500. It was denied by a certain executive in the AG's office. And so then let me explain why. Before, you know, you have the knee-jerk reaction here. Here's what I found out, and I just got this information Monday afternoon. I checked with the new director of HR, and so here's how attorneys are compensated in the AG's office. It's dependent upon years of your bar number and how many years. For example, I have been licensed since 92. What's that? 29 years. That would make me, I'm currently a grade 4. For 12 years and more, that would make me eligible to be a grade 5 attorney. In the office, in the AG's office, there are 7 other attorneys that have the same bar year that I do. 5 of them are grade 5s. 2 of us are grade 4s. My currently hourly rate that the council paid me when I was first hired 7 years ago puts me about $3 to $6 more an hour than those of my same pay grade. So that's the reason that a certain executive in the AG's office has always denied any employee incentive award on my behalf, because he says I'm getting paid more than my my peers. There's only a limited number of grade 5 slots in the Attorney General's office. And this is just what I have been told in the past, is that they want to save those for actual bona fide AG employees. And I'm just a hybrid employee of the AG's office. Tyson and Marlise are in the same situation. They are grade 3 attorneys, or no, grade 4. No, you guys don't have 12 years yet, right? Okay, Tyson is a grade 4. Okay, then Marlise must be as well. They're currently actually making about $5 to $7 more an hour than their peers in the AG's office. So that knowledge, I don't know how. I know that there are some people in the AG's office that are aware of that. Not very many, but that has created some negative feelings towards UPC personnel, because they think that, you know, it's not fair that we're getting paid more than them.
When you say peer, you mean
bar
12
years
of experience?
Correct.
So they may be doing, like, not what their job is.
Right.
Just based on years of experience.
That's correct. Yeah, it's just based solely on years of experience that Rob was asking. So in terms of, Ed, thank you, and Steve, you know, compensating us more, none of us are going to, and then Ron and Marilyn are kind of the same thing. I didn't ask about their salary specifically because they are merit employees of the AG's office. I mean, that's the other thing that many of our peers in the AG's office don't understand, is that Tyson, Marlise, and I are at-will employees. And they don't realize that the council is the one that sets our salaries. So I don't know if that answers your question, Rob.
It's amazing to me how much time passes and nothing changes. This is the last time I'll go back to 20 years ago, but we fought this fight with Mark Nash. And I was on the council when he went to the Attorney General's office and said, we set his salary and I did.
We're not catching any of this.
Yeah, sorry. Here, David, will you come up here and just share that? I'm going to have him move up here by Marilyn.
A lifetime ago, when I was on the council previously, we had this same fight with the Attorney General's office. It was then Jan Graham. with Mark Nash, and the Attorney General's office wants to pay the executive director of UPC as if you belong to them, and you don't. The statute's clear, and so I think it's structurally important to maintain that independence, and particularly from my perspective as a county attorney, we follow the statute, and there's reasons why you're not part of the Attorney General's office. Way back when, we exercised our authority and gave Mark Nash an increase. I don't know if you remember that. And it caused a fair bit of a stir, but it's within our authority. And obviously, I'm not on the council, but the council certainly, I would encourage the council to exercise its independence and set your salary where they think your salary ought to be set.
So the question I'm trying to get to is, so we don't have any type of formal structure for pay. It's just... the council just decides on a year-to-year basis, or fails to decide on a year-to-year basis what salaries are. Like in Kane County, and I think a lot of counties are similar, there's automatic increases for years of service, you know, 1, 3, 5, you know, whatever the years are. And there's annually the county commission decides a cost of living adjustment. Mm-hmm. And my county has been very good at every year ensuring that we do the Social Security Administration recommended, because otherwise you're paying your people less over every year.
Right.
And then we also have a system of merit increases where, based on actual performance, you can give raises. And it sounds like the council doesn't have anything in place like that at all.
We are, as UPC employees, we're supposed to get the annual increase that the legislature awards the Attorney General's office. The person that has provided the financial information to me in the past is leaving the Attorney General's office. I just shared with my staff, I just found out that for this year, the increase that was awarded to the AG's office was not given to us in terms of a salary raise, but was given to us to use as employee incentive awards, which may or may not have been granted, but that has been rectified. We appreciate Rick Crantrell, Chief of Staff of the AG's office, getting involved in that whatever it was, 0.5%, basically it's $1,500 a year that all Attorney General employees receive in terms of a pay raise, has now been awarded to the 5 UPC employees, whereas previously it was not. So that issue has been resolved. But yeah, the council doesn't have any kind of a, you know, way of looking at our salary. The council hasn't looked at our salaries since I've been here. We've just gone with whatever the state has awarded all state employees.
So when the state does that cost of living adjustment, you do adopt it.
We're supposed to, and I'm hoping under the new finance director that I won't have to worry about that in the future, but yes, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Is that in this current budget? And how much is it this year?
It was the 2021 budget. That was the $1,500 increase that we're now getting back, that we're getting back paid.
So it's not a percentage, it's a dollar amount.
Well, it was, I can't remember exactly what the percentage was, but it was like 7%. Or point, what it came out to was $1,496 was what every employee in the AG's office got this year from the legislature.
So Bob, I'm just checking memories with David, and there was always a little bit of sensitivity, well, a lot of sensitivity when it came to the executive director. So
right.
That was one issue. But back then, or not even too long ago, we were operating on the surcharge.
Right.
So that was another wrinkle of the whole thing, and now we're not on the surcharge. But even besides the executive director, all of the staff, if there was any kind of increase, this executive director would bring that to the council. The council would approve the recommendation or even suggest an amount. Because you remember, Ron, we'd have to leave the room and they talk about us for a while, and then they let us back in. So it's kind of all of us, but for the executive director, it seemed to be a little bit more prickly with the AG's office. Is that right?
Yeah, that's entirely right. And I just think it's important